The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Moving the Needle. This podcast is really trying to have some in-depth conversations on a number of things. I am Pastor Sebron O. Johnson. I'm the Alpha. I'm here with that Omega.
You know, we got the ending, the one and only. We got the beginning doesn't even matter, sir. The beginning, people forget about the beginning. You only remember what you did last. And that's the ending. It's the Omega. It's Dr. Paul Miller here with Moving the Needle Podcast.
I'm going to try to get through this one. That purple shirt he has on is bothering me. I want to give a black and gold blanket to him. But we're going to move on. Here on Moving the Needle, we're trying to deal with three things. The what, the so what, and the now what. I understand that the what today, we're going to talk about some silos and really get down on that kind of thing. So in a second, I'm going to ask Dr. Miller to kind of open us up with some thoughts about silos in our city and the so what, why is it so important to us? What is it doing to us? And I think Dr. Miller can close us out a little later saying this is what he feels that can be done differently to really break down the silos. But if you don't mind, let me go ahead and introduce our guest. We have the one and only Torian Uthman here with us. He's the Vice President of Youth and Education at the Urban League of Rochester. I've had the great honor of working with him for a number of years at the Urban League before moving on to other things, and he is doing some great things in education. Hey, if you don't mind, Torian, could you just give us a little bit about your background and how you got to this position, and we'll go from there?
So a little bit about my background, and thank you for Dr. Miller and Pastor Sebron for having me on this podcast today. A little bit about my background is I came back to Urban League in the workforce development, working with juveniles, and I loved it. My thing with them was we just didn't provide them with enough resources to be successful. Then I got that program ended. I went over to Gear Up, and I had students that, to my saying, had a silver spoon or a gold spoon in their mouths, right? Like, they didn't really need the help, but we gave them extra help, right? And so for them, they didn't really value it to me, for all of them. So I went back to workforce and dealt with more students, and I learned, and I came to Sebron and I said, listen, my thing is, how do Urban League expand our work? Not for the students that really need us, and not for the students that we only are trying to catch at once something happens, but how do we keep them motivated and going throughout life, throughout the situations, right? And so that's where we have now expanded our work to not just being for only the successful students, but now we have everyone to be a collective effort. And so that's where our work is now today.
You know, and I think about that, brother, and it sounds like you're expanding your reach and you're trying to reach as many students as possible and also the underdog students, right? But if we're, and I know we're talking about silos today, so if we were going to compare that, it would be you saying, I'm only going to work with the elite students and we're only going to do this with them in this little corner. And that's what a silo is. Like you're working with a certain group, and you're only working in that group, and you won't collaborate or work with other groups. And a lot of times people get left out when you're working in silos. And these silos are existing on a larger scale here in Rochester, and it's causing a lot of dysfunction. It causes inability to collaborate. It causes inability to communicate. And without that, everything breaks down. What are your feelings or thoughts on that? Like, Why is Rochester like that, man? Let me back up and say, are you from here?
I am from here. I went to Wilson Magna High School, then I went to MCC, played basketball for MCC, played basketball at Roberts, and still here currently.
So you are here, and you are from here. So you know this city, and you know this city well. Why are there so many silos here? I have my theories. I know Reverend Johnson here probably has his theories. Let's break into it a little bit.
Okay, so for me, one of the things is with working with the juvenile justice program, which was called Face Forward, at that time we were in high schools. And so every high school I was in was saturated with support. So you have Hillside, you have Center for Youth, you had Upward Bound. And so for me, it was like, when I was working with them students, it was all like a fight. Like, yo, you can't talk to this kid.
The have and the have-nots also. Yeah. So they already have. So,
yes.
Right?
And so it was, to me, was like, okay, well, what else can I do to make an effective change to add collaboration? So I sat everybody down at Leadership and East, and I said, listen, I'm not here to fight. I just want to make sure we serve the young people to our fullest. And so that's what we have. I have always been doing, is bringing everybody to the table and talking about it. But there are some people that still like, nah, we have to get this. Or the recognition.
But to get to the root of why it exists, right? So, and I know that it's going on, but why does it exist? Because Rochester, so in my mind, it's comes down to the politics of money. It comes to this crab in the barrel mentality. So we're a medium-sized city. So everybody thinks that you got to pull somebody down or not let people in to get to where you got to go. And then within the dysfunction, there's, for some reason, there's like this money and dark clouds in this dysfunction. So people like the fact that the money in politics, the politics is the control and the power, and the money is in it. And so with that, people want to remain in this dark cloud because they don't want to lose their money or they don't want to lose their power. And so, but it's not about how do we fix this city, because everybody wants to be the person or who does it instead of saying, hey, we can work together and do this. We can do a better job. I don't really care who gets the credit at the end of the day, as long as I'm included, as long as I'm part of the solution. And Rochester just has you look at education, you look at the business world, you look at politics, you look at the government. There's this mentality that is so jacked up here. And, you know, that's my theory. Reverend Johnson, what's your theory of why silos exist here?
You know what? I think that there are silo makers. There are people who don't have what it takes to break down and say, you don't tell me who I talk to. You don't tell me who I collaborate with, that I have a goal to get a project done. I have a goal to move the needle. And if it takes sitting down with somebody who doesn't look like me, sound like me, have my same political aspirations, I'm going to sit down because I want to make sure I get it done. So here's an issue, and I can bring Torian in on this one. I can recall a time when there were things that we could not do at the Urban League with anybody outside of Rochester City School District. That you didn't bring in charter schools to do this conversation. You didn't have other kind of conversations, that you stayed right on point with just RCSD. And somehow, and I gotta give you credit for this, Torian said, if we are going to advance and if we're gonna be an agency that represents and reflects the interests of all students, then we have to break down some of those locked doors and talk to everybody. So Torian, what did you have inside? What made you say that I have to break the mold on this thing and do it differently?
I think it's the passion for the young people. And so when I still sit down, I talk to teen empowerment with Miss Mitchum over there, and I've sat down with Champion Academy and talked to them about how to break silos. I think there's a new wave. And when you was talking, Dr. Miller, this was what came up into my head, is the old ways is what created the silos. The young, as I look at Dr. Miller right now, right, we all look around the same age, right? And so it's now the young.
I knew he was going to say it. I'm the young one in here.
So
he came in here with the slow motion and the life alert.
I think it takes alert. Now a new age, right, to start tearing down some of the silos that has been created.
Right.
And I think that's, we all have to, as new leaders, have to come to the table and say, hey, what are we all going to do to break and help our community? If we don't do that, we're going to stay in the same ruts that we've been in, and it won't affect change. But can I say something?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
I think there was, y'all was just talking about on air, that comment that was said. I don't think you will ever hear that comment said from someone that's young.
What's the comment?
That they don't want to work with each other, right? City schools don't want to work with charter schools. I don't think you will ever hear that from anybody that's young, because we understand that it takes all of us, and which was used to be said, it takes a village, right, to raise this generation. We're starting to get away from that, it takes a village. How do we get back to it really takes a village? And that talks about expertise and who might have it and who might not. And we got to be okay with, if this is not my ballpark, how do I pass it to someone else?
Right, and I think that leaders, so I find leaders, and even our political leaders, this is a challenge out to y'all, because our political leaders out there, a lot of them are worried about how do I stay in power. Look at our mayor, our assemblymen, our councilmen, and not everybody, right? So there's people who are genuine and in it for the right reasons too. But there's a lot of our folks who have ran for office that instead of now bringing people together, they're doing things and making policies based off of what's going to keep them in office. So if this voter constituency is not rocking with this idea, I'm not rocking with this idea. I know there's people who don't rock with charter schools just because they know that their constituencies and their large voter groups or the unions don't rock with them. And so now I can't, now I'm not going to publicly speak out because I really don't feel bad about them, but I'm not going to publicly rock with them and try to fight or advocate the same way I am for other things. That is creating a silo because we have leaders who want, are self-preserving and who are trying to stay in office rather than collaborate and work together and do what's best for this city and do what's best for the people and do what's best for, you know, moving forward for change. And that's my issue, brother. It's like these people don't want, they are more worried about themselves than worried about anybody else.
I think, though, the opportunity, though, for partnerships and collaborations are there. When I sit down at some of these meetings and I talk to different banks, and one of them I would shout out is probably ESL, right? Like, they help if you are collaborating in partnership with other people, not just saying, hey, well, Urban League, this is what we're doing. No, this is what Exceptional and Urban League is doing. How can you help this fight? How can you help this effort? So I think now the time is now, but we have to start moving. We can't keep talking the talk and not fully walking the walk.
Right. You know, I was having a conversation a few years ago with someone in a police union, and they said to me that it's a shame the way things are today. They wish that they can roll back the hands of time and go back to how it was in the 70s when everything was great in Rochester. And I was thinking about that. Wow, that's kind of an elitist attitude because it wasn't so great for black people in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s or the 2000s. And it seems to me that sometimes you talk about those generational gaps that people tend to try to keep things the way they've always been because it benefited their class or race or their circumstance. And I think that we're going to have to somehow take a real hard look, and I've said this before, at our fair city and understand that there is a reason that we're in the top 10 of most segregated cities in the country. There's a reason that the district is struggling right now to educate black and brown people, these same people who migrated during the Great Migration from the South to the North, trying to find a better way of life and only found factory jobs. There's a reason why when we lose a Kodak and a Bausch Alam and a Xerox and the technology sector isn't what it, we're not up to power technology because manufacturing is dying, that black and brown people can't find jobs. There's a reason for this. And now we have to find a way to really fight it. And Dr. King said something that was really profound that kind of fits right here. In talking about racism and segregation, he said that the real enemy and the real block to our success is not so much the racist folks. It's the appalling silence of so-called good people. That those same ones of us that we sit next to and dap it up with and go out with, they're not saying anything about this. And I'm a little mad today because our kids are dying. Every single day, they are dying. And we're having these petty arguments about who we will and won't sit down with. And our babies are dying. We're having these petty arguments about who's going to be this president or this chief or who's going to vote me into a school board. And the baby's dying. So all this mess is happening, but nobody wants to talk about the babies that are dying. And they're dying uneducated. And if we don't break down these silos, I don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, after that, that's sort of like a mic drop. Yeah. But I think the one thing that I would piggyback off of is that's what I tell my team at Urban League, is every day I wake up, there is another young person dying. And so how do we effectively come in and help? And the one thing that we have to think about is when I sit down at tables with white people is that they have the network. They band together. And so I was at FLCC and they said, what are you talking about? We don't band together. I said, yeah, y'all do. Because if you tell Johnny, like, hey, my son Sam needs a job, and he goes out and networks with all his people, and Sam has a job. But I can't say that about my son. I can't say my son, let me go to Sebring and say, Sebring, my son need a job. It takes months to years for my son still to get a job because we don't have that network. Like, we don't have the collaboration together. And that's the problem with these young people today. The reason why they're dying in the streets is because, yo, we're not picking them up in the streets. We're not saying, yo, you're suspended. How can I get you in this program to occupy your time and to help you learn why you're suspended? What they do is they go to the streets.
So I have a question for Dr. Miller. This is a strategy question. I need you to help me here. Talk me off this ledge. So we heard it said that on air that a strategy was going to be that there's that not to talk to charter schools. When you hear something like that, strategy-wise, this is not even, this is not emotional. This is a man who's led a successful school in Green Tech in Albany, and had to have strategy despite some of the issues that he had to overcome. So strategy-wise, do you work harder to sit down at that table and have conversations? Do you say, since you don't want to work with me, I'll work around you? Do you abolish the conversation altogether? What's the strategy in dealing with something that way?
You know, I think we don't give up. I think we work towards forcing the issue, you know, and we force the issue. And whether we got to go over, around it, under it, or through it, we figure out a way to get people on board to this conversation. We get people away if we force the issue. And they, you know, sometimes if you're standing on somebody's neck, they're a lot easier they're going to do what you need them to do. And so this isn't about anything physical or any physical violence, but mentally, spiritually, emotionally, we need to do what's best for our babies. So we need to put pressure. We need to put a challenge. We're going to put challenges out there. We've put a challenge out there in the last few weeks that said, hey, we will band together, Sebring and I, and our organizations, and we will we'll do the first school even for free. For free 99, we will show them how to fix their school. We will fix it for them as long as we have a leader who's willing and they drop the bureaucratic nonsense for that potential organization. And we will help them fix and show them how to fix it. But not only that, we're going to challenge leadership. We're going to challenge their board to have a conversation with us. We're going to challenge board members. I just had a lunch meeting and Camille Simmons was sitting next to me. And we talked about her coming here and having a conversation with us. And so I'm trying to get Camille in to have a conversation with us. And so maybe we work around some of the challenges that are there and we start to develop people who are interested and willing to have the conversation, who want change, and maybe Camille, James, Isaiah. I had breakfast the other day with Isaiah. We had a conversation with James. So I believe there's some people that may be wanting and willing, but also there's a strong influence. So guess what? We put a stronghold on that influence another way because you know what? It only takes a majority vote. And if we can get enough of their people to say, let's do something different, I think strategically we can make it work.
I like that. Strategically, we can make it work. So we're not giving up no matter what. Let me ask this, Torian. When we started looking at real talk, that our kids, by and large, are failing. By and large, they're not doing well across any school system, whether it's RCSD, even some charter schools. They're not doing as well as we would want them to. Because when you don't have 100% of your kids graduating, that means somebody is not. If 100% of them are not proficient, that means somebody's not proficient. But I want to know, because Urban League has these comprehensive programs, so I want to know, what do you do and how do you prioritize when you have a student that is not doing well in school, but that student also has to deal with who got shot in their family last week. That student also has to figure out how we're going to eat, not only me, but my little brother, little sister. That student also has to understand, well, how do I even get the pencils that I need? And while you're trying to get me to do good in school, I just want to make sure I have a coat to wear in the wintertime. How do you deal with a plethora of problems that come at students?
So the one thing I'm going to say is this. That's after post-pandemic. That's every student nowadays. So for
me,
so I when I sat down with the city school district the other day, I said, listen, my thing is this. Every student before the pandemic was a different student. So when I ran Gear Up, it was different because those students have never was been exposed to the trauma or poverty of what their families was going through before the pandemic. Parents could used to hide whatever was going on in the house because you had that break, right? You had that morning where the kids was away. You could send them somewhere in the afternoon. So it gave y'all a chance to hide what was going on or deal with the problems in your own ways, right? But now when the pandemic happened and students was home, I mean, they had maybe had Chromebooks, but we weren't up to where we needed to be for the pandemic. The students got exposed. They got exposed to the trauma. They got exposed to poverty. Now they got exposed to having to babysit, right? And now we became accustomed to that because that was the way of life for 2 years. And so now what happens is that maintains into the students' lives after the pandemic. And so now we're putting them back into the schools where they're thinking of poverty. They saw the trauma. They still have to worry about, hey, who do I got to go home and babysit after school? Where do kids learn how to be kids again? And so these are some of the things that we have to, as educators too, and this is sort of why I tell my team, we have to learn, is the students not trying to learn, or are we trying to teach them one way underneath the emotions and the trauma that they're going through that day? So we have to figure that out first.
So you're laying out for us a lot of the traumas, a lot of the issues that exist post-pandemic that some might have been there, but not to this degree. And now we want to try to go back like it's business as usual, and it's not usual anymore. So, and I'm asking this to Paul Miller on this one because I think when you went to Green Tech, there were issues. There were traumas. There were kids who had various pains and things that were going on in life. And I think, and please correct me, you had to say that those may be obstacles, but they're not really barriers, that somehow or another we're going to get you past that. Even when we can't resolve every issue in your life, you can still learn. How did you do that?
So a lot of it is building empathy in adults and helping adults remove their biases so they can work instead of feeling sorry for the kids and building an empathetic understanding lens. But on top of that, with that empathetic lens, what that means is we have high expectations for all. So we got to stop making goddamn excuses for our kids. Stop feeling bad for them. Stop feeling sorry for them. Stop excusing their behavior, putting high expectations in and putting structures with rituals and routines in so we can build strong individuals who are mentally tough instead of these weak-minded individuals that we are putting out here. So we don't have to have, and you know what, it's about helping them rebuild. So we're meeting them where they're at, and then helping them rebuild.
I think that's the key, though, what you just said, meeting them where they're at.
Absolutely.
So if let's be real, if a teacher that don't look like you don't know what you're going through, there's no way we can meet where we're at. Because what you keep trying to do is put me out. You ain't trying to hear me. You're just trying to put me out. So I'm okay with what you're saying, but we got to still meet them where they're at. So, to help them rebuild.
Absolutely. So, for example, like I just before I came here to do the show today, I had a meeting with Christine Farrell over at GCC Flower City Campus, the Genesee Community Charter School. And so what she's bringing me in to do is I'm doing a 5-series on DEI. So we're doing a book talk. We're doing like a movie that brings out stereotypes and some other things. Then we are looking at teaching urban children. then we are looking at white privilege, then we're looking at how do we change their mindset, and we need to do better, and how do we reframe their mindset as teachers and educators. We're doing a 5-part series with their educators to try to push them to bring their biases up and out, to build their lens from an empathetic lens so they can reduce their sympathy, increase their empathy, and keep the expectations that they need for their kids so her teachers can continue to do the work that's necessary for the kids. But see, it's about setting a foundation. The fact is, I applaud her that she wants and is willing to do this work with her staff. So she's pulling in, whether it's me or somebody else, I don't care who it is, right? The fact that she's willing to do the work, and she's willing to do it. And there's so many places that are not willing to do the work, and that's part of the problem. And then you make excuses, and oh, I feel so bad about that. Or even, I'm not going to call that parent because I'm afraid to talk to that mama because that mama might say something I don't like, and that mama's going to cuss me out. So I'm just not going to call her. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to call her, not going to communicate, but that's your own bias. That's your own stuff. Right. And so how do we get past that? How do we work that? Because that kid needs you to be able to empathize, meet them where they're at, but stop making excuses for them. Have your expectations high. Because right now we have teachers that don't believe that kids can learn. We have teachers that don't believe that kids are good enough. We have teachers that believe that kids aren't capable or able. So until we can increase the level of their belief, we're not going to be able to fully change it. So once we change their belief and we work towards them changing their own belief, we can do something different. And I think that's where we start. And that's part of like making sure that these schools are and these teachers, because the truth is, in most cases, they're not going to have educators that look like them. I wish they did. I'm going to fight for it. I'm about to try to hit up all the talent we can to try to get as many people as we can in front of our kids and people of color. And how do we grow our own? How do we do all these things? But the truth of it is, most teachers are white females, right? Most teachers, not everybody, but most teachers are white females. But that does not mean that our kids can't learn from them. That just means they have to approach it a little bit differently. They have to build a relationship with our kids. They have to show them that they care, and they have to empathize with them first and foremost before they do anything else and be invested in our kids. And we have to teach them how to do that to break some of these playing fields down.
While you was talking, I thought of this story, and I keep recruiting staff from this one agency, and I can't say it. But they tell their staff that you cannot do more outside of your job description.
That's crazy.
And so for me, I keep recruiting people from them because I say, yo, this is what I want you to do. I want you to shine in what you feel that is your expertise, right? But that to me goes back to silos. Because I was thinking, like I said, hey, we adopted the Common Core. And most of us parents still are lost in this Common Core business. Because we knew when we grew up, there was not one right way to do anything. Like we could get to 5 with however way we wanted to. 10 divided by 2, 3 plus 2. Like we came up with ways to get to 5. But now, are we teaching our young people though with the Common Core and there's one right way to do things? Are we starting to, in your opinion, show them that there's only one way to success when there might be multiple ways?
So I'm going to give this to you because you're going to close us out too, Dr. Miller. But I think a lot of what's been advocated for is something that we'll call empathetic accountability, that you can understand where a child comes from, understand the roadblocks in their life, and still expect and demand more from them. Correct. That they are not underachievers, they're overachievers. If we've gotten through all the things in our history that we've gotten to so far, we can get through this. And I'm grateful to you, Torian, that you're still fighting a good fight, man, and don't ever give up. I'm grateful if I've been able to play even a small part in that, but I'm so very proud, man, godly proud of what you're doing. And no matter what you hear, don't give up on them, man. They need you. I want Dr. Miller to kind of close us out. I want to tell you, I'm in awe of Dr. Miller, by the way. This brother does some of everything. I mean, he does discovery analysis, executive coaching, DEI. I'm buying a car from him later. He's selling some bootleg Q t-shirts. I mean, he's doing everything. So I'm in awe of everything that Paul Miller is doing. But in all seriousness, I want him to use another one of his great gifts and give us a closeout on what we can do to end some of these silos.
You know, and think about it, we need to, one of the first things we do is accountability and calling them out. So you made a mention that, with the organization that tells their people that, you know, the Rochester City School District tells their teachers that you can't do certain things outside of your contract. So, for example, if I'm not mistaken, unless the contract has changed, you cannot stay after school and provide additional support unless you're paid. So think about that. You're telling a teacher that they can't. So if I want to stay and I want to help my student because they didn't get a concept, they didn't, and they need extra help, and because if I can keep them after school longer, because I know between the hours of 4 and 7 are the most dangerous hours anyways, where they're going to do things that aren't appropriate or they're going to get into something, and I can keep them a little long, keep them out of it, also enrich their ability to understand whatever we're going over, I can't do that unless I'm getting paid. I understand getting paid and valued, but I can't do it because I'm getting paid. And those are the things that are the problems. Those are things that are creating the division. Those are things that are creating the silos. Until we continue to call them out, until we demand accountability from our leaders, until we demand accountability from our organizations, and then be willing to have the conversations and partner with each other. You know, I think it's a beautiful opportunity that we've had this conversation today. We've had the opportunity to meet you, Mr. Oofman, and you know, the fact is that you guys are doing so many amazing things. Now, how do we continue and put them into action and carry over? So now that we are purposeful and we create action, and we create action that will do something different, that we can chip away and show and be a model, an example, and hopefully an inspiration to people to show them that it's okay, that we're not trying to steal from each other. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to take anything that you have. If I can add to it, great. But I don't want anything that you have. I'm not trying to pull away. I want to see you win, my brother. I want to see your organization win. I want to see you be successful. And that's the attitude that we need to bring towards everything that we do, instead of the crabs in the bucket mentality, instead of building a silo. Oh, that's the Urban League over there. Oh, hey, he don't know what he's doing. I hate that dude over there. I hate that organization over there. Nah, guess what? I love the fact that what he's doing. I love the fact that he's trying to make things happen. How can we work together? How can we do things differently? How can we support? How can we find angles or avenues or opportunities of things that we can do together to make a difference, and then show other people that it's okay, that we're not here to hurt each other. We're here to help each other. We live in the same city, and it's okay. We can be friends. We can even agree to disagree on things and still get along. I disagree with this dude all the time, but it's okay. At the end of the day, it's okay. We can still be brothers in unity and be able to get things done in the city, and that's the only way that we're going to break these silos and move the needle. So until next time, y'all, we're going to bring y'all some more heat. We're going to keep on moving the needle, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.